You want to proceed? Okay, at 1:05, we are calling the meeting to order. This is Barbara Mason. I represent the Boeing Company, and I am opening up the Orange County Workforce Development Board's one-stop oversight committee meeting. This meeting is recorded, so people are reminded this meeting is recorded, and we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the
republic for which it stands,
one nation,
under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all. Thank you. With that, we'll take the roll.
Rob Claudia.
Here.
Mike Daniel. Chris Horton.
Present.
Barbara Mason.
Present.
Gary Mackin. Carlos Aragon.
Present.
Michael Bruin. And Brielle Toomer-Bias. And we do not have quorum yet.
How many more do we need for quorum?
Just one more.
Okay, hopefully we get that. So I like the idea of we'll go to the information items, but before that we do that, we'll go to public comment. So at this time we will open up for public comment. And just a reminder, the comments need to relate to the agenda items posted.
We did not receive any requests in advance. If there are members of the public this afternoon that would like to address the committee, please use the hand raise icon or press star 9 and I will unmute you. Seeing none, Chair.
Okay, seeing none, we will close public comment. And we will move to the information items and circle back when we hopefully obtain another committee member. The first one is number 8 is program performance.
Okay, Desiree, I'm going to go ahead and handle the first item, which is the America Works One-Stop Operator quarter 3 performance. Can we go scroll ahead to that page? Okay, can we make it a little bit bigger? I apologize. There we go.
It is a little small.
All right, so this is quarter 3 performance. That is the period of January 1st, 2022 through March 31st, 2022. The one-stop operators contract, as a reminder, is for $1.1 million. Their whole contract is designed to provide one-stop operator support and training to our system. So the theory is that the one-stop operator manages all of our workforce centers and affiliates, but then they also make training available to our partners and ensure that partners are co-located in our facilities. With this particular performance period, I'll just kind of go through how well they've done. For direct program support, you'll see that 86% of the funding that we provided to them has been utilized. So the balance left on the contract for the remaining period is $138,990. For the administrative portion of their contract, 77% of that has been expended. So the balance of that is $24,899.04. And so then the remaining portion of the $1.1 million, 85% is exhausted, which is approximately $163,889.45. Given that we have about 3 more months left of this contract, I just want to share with you, I went to the Board of Supervisors and asked to provide additional funding to their contract to ensure that there's enough money to take them to the end. Because what we don't want to do is have a situation where our one-stop operator doesn't have the appropriate amount of funding for the remaining 3 months. So we've added an additional roughly about $300,000 to their contract so that we can ensure that there's plenty of funding for our system. Any questions or concerns about the money and where it's spent? Okay, all right. So then the next is providing services and support to the clients that walk through the center. Oh, no, go back up, Desiree. So the next is the performance support or program activities. So in our contract with the one-stop operator, because we don't know how many people are going to walk through the system, we couldn't give them a target goal. So what we asked them to do is just document or demonstrate how many people are entering into the system that they're touching. Now, they can enter in the system to see any of our partners, but the intent is whenever there's someone who's visited our system for the first time that we get notified of that or we keep information on that. So for this quarter, like I said, between January and March, 569 new people entered the system. So for the year-to-date total, that is 2,345 individuals. 871 participants received virtual training. And so for the year-to-date total, that's 2,140 people. And then 314 people received on-site training. So that's a total of 860 people for the year. And then they've got one person for ACT work keys. And so that year-to-date total is four. As a reminder, the ACT work keys, I don't know if you recall when you took the ACTs for college, it's the same organization. They've developed a training curriculum to help people identify skill levels that employers can utilize to help with their placement. And so what they do is they have a assessment that they conduct at the beginning of the program with participants to figure out where their education and functioning levels are, and then help skill them up so that they're more marketable to an employer. So right now, not as many partners and our service providers are not utilizing that service, but it's an excellent resource for helping us figure out who is suitable for a position with an employer. So I wanted to provide you that information. Are there any questions or concerns about the data that's presented to you today?
I find it interesting that the virtual training numbers, that's almost 40% of your total of the visitors. So, I mean, it kind of just kind of points the way of where we're probably heading more and more in offering more and more of that menu of services for these customers, because that's getting closer and closer to 50%.
It really is. You're right. I think that it's becoming the new norm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're finding the same thing in services for EDD, especially our follow-up services with UI claimants. There's just, you know, having a virtual appointment, whether it's for re-employment and eligibility assessment, you don't have all of the excuses that you used to hear before, that people couldn't get there because they had problems with transportation, they had childcare issues, none of that. Our attendance is way higher. Yeah, interesting.
Are there any other questions?
Very interesting point. Mm-hmm.
Just so you know, I also invited the one-stop operator to today's meeting for two reasons. One, if you had any questions or concerns about what you saw in this report, that we can address those directly with the service provider. And then two, when we get to the action item, I want to have the operator to provide us insight of why they provided the guidance they did in terms of the continuous improvement plan.
Is this where I can ask a question regarding the mobile units?
In our original plan, the mobile unit was supposed to be under this, but because of insurance reasons, we couldn't put the mobile unit under the one-stop operator, although it is a part of the one-stop system. Unfortunately, because the liability, the county owns its own insurance and they can only allow county employees to drive it. So I couldn't turn it over to the one-stop operator. However, it is still part of our one-stop delivery system. And next year we'll work towards how the operator plays a role in ensuring service delivery using the mobile unit, although we'll have to drive it.
All right, thank you.
There are no more questions. We can go to the next item. So the next item, I'm going to turn it over to Zit Lalik.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Nice to see all of you. I'm going to be reporting on quarter three performance for our service provider of WIOA Title I Career Services for adult and dislocated workers. I'm going to go ahead and start off with our Adult North program. For our Adult North program, MCS was allocated $900,000 thus far year to date. They have expended 525,000 $79.94, which is 58% of the budget. In quarter three, they expended $216,000 for $129,000, with the majority of it being direct program costs and also for individual training accounts. For performance categories, in quarter three, there were 67 new enrollments, and 50 of those individuals had barriers, they're part of our target population. There were 17 employment placements, and the median earnings for the quarter was $8,633. Two attainment of degrees or certificates, and two in program skills gains. 32 of them retain employment with the same employer. We also had 11 co-enrollments, which means that other programs, such as our VEEP program or our partnership with United Way, or our AB 1111 programs, co-enrolled some of their participants with our Adult North program. And there were nine program exits. In addition to that, you will see, if you scroll a little bit lower, Desiree, for me, in the bottom of that page, you'll see that most of the participants, if not all of them, were engaged into an activity within 1 week of program enrollment. And during quarter three, there were also four ITAs that were completed for a total of 16. And there were no OJTs or transitional jobs or work experience for quarter three in the Adult North program. Any questions on Adult North? If no questions, I'll go ahead and...
I know I've asked this before. North doesn't cut off at Santa Ana, right? It kind of zigzags a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm not too sure what the actual barriers are. Karma, do we have an actual line barrier that we follow?
Karma, you're muted.
Sorry, we do have a map. So it used to be based on the Irvine location. So we used to have a facility in Irvine that kind of cut the map, kind of like Irvine Tustin's area, kind of airport area down. We will have to revise that map now that we are looking at having the Laguna location and possibly other locations through the city. We'll have to revise that map to make it very clear. We might even have to separate it even more than just North and South. We might have to do it district-wide just to make it make more sense for us, because I feel like when we do North and South, it kind of like leaves a lot to question. And as we open up other facilities, it's going to get real tricky in determining what part is North, what part is South. So it may just need to be based on district or the district map.
I like that idea, as breaking it into the districts. I think it'll make it easier. Thank you.
I'll go ahead and move forward with our Adult South program. For Adult South, MCS has been allocated $100,000 to provide services to Adult South participants. In quarter three, they expended $208,333. And again, most of it was towards direct program costs and individual training accounts. So we have a lot of individuals enrolling into training, which is great news. We also had participants who are participating in transitional job opportunities that are being offered through our business solutions team and our 211 OC partnership. Year-to-date expenditures are $506,924, and they've expended 63% of their budget for the Adult South program. For performance, in quarter three, we have 52 new enrollments. 43 were part of a target population, 16 employment placements. Our median earnings were $7,800. One degree or certificate was attained, three in program skills gains, 17 participants retained employment with the same employer. We had four co-enrollments and 11 program exits. And just as with the Adult South, Adult North program, most of our participants are engaged into a class or workshop or some sort of activity within the first week of program enrollment. Lastly, there were 3 ITA enrollments and then 1 participant began a work experience / transitional job opportunity during this quarter. Any questions on Adult South? Sorry, Desiree, I think I've kept going and then I didn't tell you to scroll down to, to the bottom half. Oh, there you are. I'll go ahead and keep it going in the interest of time. Please feel free to stop me if you have any questions. I'm happy to answer them. For Dislocated Worker North, MCS has been allocated $950,000. In quarter three, they expended $221,031. And year-to-date expenditure, $635,573.69. They've expended 67% of their budget. Most of it, again, for direct program cost, individual training accounts. And we also have some participants in this program who are participating in work experience transitional job opportunities. For performance, we had 20 enrollments. We had 17 employment placements, and the median earnings for our Dislocated Worker North group are $10,987. 1 certificate was attained, 6 in-program skills gains. We have 86 individuals who have retained employment with the same employer, 1 co-enrollment, and 12 program exits. All of the Dislocated Worker North participants were engaged in their first class or workshop within the first week of being enrolled in the program. We had 2 ITAs completions and 1 transitional job placement.
I do have a question on the 17 employment placements. Do you have the industries that they would, like, remember we had asked that before? We wanted to know, are they getting jobs in the targeted industries that we're supposed to be, you know, having employers, you know,
provide? Yes, sir. And, you know, after I review the Dislocated Worker South, you'll be happy to see that I have a list of those employments. And exactly what the industries were, and you'll be able to see how many full times and part times and what their average hourly rate was.
Oh, great.
So and we'll go over that in a second.
Key growing areas we've identified, right?
Yeah. So I'll go ahead and share with those with you. And just 1 second, let me just review Dislocated Worker South really quickly, and we'll get into those other reports. Okay. For Dislocated Worker South, MCS has been allocated $850,000. In quarter three, they expended $165,984. And with a year-to-date expenditures of $537,619.35, they've expended 63% of their budget. For individual training accounts, they utilized $56,431. They've expended most of their ITA funds through quarter three. So we're currently working with them to make sure that we do a budget modification so that they have funds to fund any training during this last quarter of this program year. For performance, there were 19 new enrollments. We had 13 employment placements. There were the median earnings, $11,305. We had 2 in-program skills gains, 26 individuals retained employment with the same employer, 1 co-enrollment, and 12 program exits. There were no ITAs, OJTs, or work experience for Dislocated Worker South, and the majority of the participants in quarter three were engaged in a class or workshop during within the first week of program enrollment. And I apologize, I think somebody was going to speak and I kept going.
Yeah, real quick, I've seen it on all these numbers, the contracted goals versus the year-to-date goals, the disparity. Is that just because so many employers are still looking for people to fill the jobs? People just aren't out looking? Is that what that's?
So, So you'll see the big disparity. Yes, it has to do with just challenges that we've had with people enrolling and challenges with being able to do outreach because of places or a lot of collaborative meetings or meetings within the communities have been canceled, but they're just now back starting to pick up. I do have to say that in quarter three, we had an increase, a large increase in enrollments, because towards the end of last quarter, MCS, I worked with MCS to create an outreach plan for quarter three. So there's been a lot more effort placed into outreach to try to get the word out about our services, our programs, about the OC Workforce Solutions Center, which I think has, you know, really helped in the enrollment numbers. But that those have been some of the challenges. It's just individuals, whether they be not knowing about our services or programs or not wanting to enroll in the program. And, you know, it just a lot of challenges with enrollments right now.
Okay, thank you.
We're hopeful that, you know, next year, now that things are hopefully going kind of back to normal, will be a lot better.
Yeah, all right.
Even with the virtual options, or do they have to, because this kind of goes to the conversations we've had before about needing to provide more virtual and less go into the facility.
It's one of Karma's big goals. You have a system, a one-stop system online, an LMS system that where we can make service provision easier for those folks that are more comfortable and are more interested in virtual services. Right now, although we can do a lot of we can do one-on-one meetings via Zoom and Teams and so that individuals can meet with their case managers. But a lot of the time we also need them to come in, for example, to take assessments, which are part of the enrollment process, or to sign intake documentation, which is part of their enrollment process. And that can be a barrier, but we're willing to meet them where they're at. We do have our mobile unit that we offer, you know, so that if they don't want to come to Garden Grove, we have various locations throughout the county that we are more than willing to meet possible participants at, so that we can meet them where they're at and support them in their efforts and make things easier on their end. And this is the employment report, the employment placement report that you mentioned, Rob, or you asked about. So at the beginning, you'll see the long list of different employers, their industries, and the sector, and then the city where that employment is, as well as the wage and the hours. Those that are highlighted in the yellow are part-time positions. Everything else is a full-time position. So you can see all of the different positions that individuals were placed at, as well as their sectors and the industries. And then Desiree, if you can scroll, just if you don't like long lists, I did make it into a chart. So you'll be for our adult program, if you see at your left, the top left-hand side, there's a little square, and those are our industry sectors. You will notice that 13% of our adults obtain employment in our health, in the healthcare industry. Nobody went to IT. We had 22% in advanced manufacturing and 13% in hospitality or tourism. And on the other side of that box, you will see the average wage, which is $20.89. There was 30 full-time employments and 3 part-time employments.
And then why do you think IT was zero for IT? What happened there? Did we not have the positions or the contacts, or why zero?
I'm not familiar. We do have MCS here who has more of a one-on-one relationship with the participants and can probably provide more information into why not IT. All of these, a lot of the training that we do and a lot of the placements that we do are always based on the customer. So what is the customer interested in? Is their need at that moment? What is their need at that moment? Somebody may just need a job and they'll take whatever, you know, is to give them a paycheck. So it's just very depending on where people are during the time of enrollment and also what their career goals are as well. We try to as the service providers, we try to make sure that their own career goals are the ones that are achieved. So it could just be that they're not interested in IT, and or maybe they are participating in training right now. And
right, and aren't ready.
Yeah.
I think this is compared to the conversation we've had the last few meetings, I appreciate these new charts very much. This is very good.
Yeah.
But I would like us to really keep an eye on those numbers and make sure that we're watching and monitoring like that zero. What are we going to have to do or any of those others to bring those up?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it's a good solid start. Thank you.
Yeah. Barbara, I can tell you just, you know, from our end of it, we find because we see a lot of IT folks in our Experience Unlimited program.
Yeah. And
most of those folks, have enough of a network
that
they don't enroll into a program.
Yeah. They're not coming to the one stop. I got
They'll come for some service, like our Experience Unlimited provides them the opportunity to network with other people that may be in their industry, but they're that not necessarily going to enroll. So
that makes sense. Maybe then our opportunity to make inroads there, because it is such a growth area, is transitioning people in kind of getting the basic training to start to pursue opportunities in IT.
Yeah, the
more experienced IT positions.
Yeah, the one job that I see universally across government and public or private sector, where I just don't know how we're communicating this to the public when they come through our doors, is the computer user support specialist. The people that help, and those are, to me, those are the entry level, but they have a good career path. We just need to kind of figure out a better focus on how to get folks more into those jobs, I think.
Yeah, well, we'll keep an eye on it. This is, so far we've done the best, it looks like, in additive advanced manufacturing and then healthcare and tourism tied at 13.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as COVID subsides, I would think the tourism would really grow that one.
Yes.
So that was for our adult program. If we continue scrolling down, Desiree, to the next page, we have our dislocated worker program employment placement report. So same thing as the previous one, you'll notice in this first page, you'll see who the employer was, the industry and sector. Those that are highlighted in yellow were part-time positions.
This one has an IT person.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So we have a 3%. We have a 3%.
That's progress.
Yeah, it is.
So
yeah, look at their wage. Yeah, IT manager at $50 an hour. Yeah,
they're going to get more. Yeah.
Yeah.
For the graph again, I've identified our industry sectors and the percentage of individuals who were or received employment or placed in employment in any of those sectors. 14% of the dislocated workers were placed in healthcare employment, 3% in IT, 17% advanced manufacturing, and 7% in hospitality or tourism, with the average wage being $24.82. We have 28 full-time and 2 part-time employment placements. Any questions?
No, but I really do like the report. I like it's broken out.
It's come a long way. Mm-hmm. Really appreciate your effort. You heard what we said and you reacted. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Does it seem that the hospitality and tourism is increasing?
You know, they're the ones that from the very beginning, post-pandemic, even though we're still kind of in the midst of a pandemic, they're the ones that, you know, came back, you know, to work right away. What concerns me is the wage, because you know, if you look at signs at a lot of the fast food restaurants, they're starting people at $20 to $23 an hour.
Wow!
And that's with very little or no experience. And then here you have hospitality and tourism, where they prefer experience, but they're kind of paying around the same or less.
Minimum,
yeah.
But yet they're busy. I mean, the hotels are fully booked.
Yes.
They're just jamming and they're charging very high room rates now.
Right, right. So the conversation we need to have with those our employers about, you know, what is a competitive wage? Yeah, because otherwise they're going to continue to experience lots of turnover.
And I've heard from people staying in the local hotels, it's booked and there aren't enough employees. So there's long waits for everything.
Right. Right. Yeah. We got some work to do.
Yeah.
That's it for me. Thank you so much. Again, if you have any other questions or any you want any additional information regarding this report, you want me to add anything, feel free to let me know and I'd be more than happy to figure out how to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Very good.
Good job.
Thank you. The next program is going to be the Goodwill of Orange County AB 1111 performance report. Can we promote Adriana?
Yeah, I'm on camera. Here I am. Okay, so the AB 1111 program was that to address barriers to employment for persons with disabilities. And the program started in 2020 and concluded at the end of this March in 2022. So this quarter three is also I'm going to show you the year to date now that the program has closed. So the budget was $375,080. We did a slight modification of the budget for this last quarter to bring more money into work experience, tuition, and stipends portions of the budget. So that was a slight modification that we made to cover our last-ditch efforts to get some earn and learn wages to our participants. So in quarter three, we do have that $17,000 expenditure that shows that last push for the stipends and tuition and so forth for earn and learn and entrepreneurship. The balance we did end up, use our direct costs and salaries and benefits. There's only a $2,000 balance that was left. We did not use the instructional materials or travel portion of the budget, and we did end up with a surplus or a balance of $54,978. That is because we didn't have the participation overall in the program that we had planned. If we go down to the enrollments, this quarter we had 7 new enrolled participants with a year to date or a total participation of 72. We almost made our goal of 75, but if you remember at the beginning of this grant, the initial program was designed for 150 participants. About halfway through, when we saw the effects of COVID, the state let us modify the program for a goal of just 75, and we almost made that. Our employment placements total for the program was 19. Our soft skills was 59, and that's the training that they received. Let's see, the co-enrollment, I'm sorry, I can't see this. Can you get one a little bit larger? Thank you. Was 38 participants co-enrolled into the WIOA career services. And let's see, provider staff training 47, work experience 8 year to date, program exit 63. So the best part of this is that we did just about make our goal for the 96% in the overall enrollment. If we move down into the training, you can just see here that the bulk of our participants were serviced 22 in the first week of enrollment and 45 within 2 weeks of enrollment. I'd like to add what is not in this chart is that in this last quarter, we had a real successful, I think the most successful part of the program was the earn and learn and entrepreneurial and e-commerce training that we had in partnership with the Ready Set OC staff, and Mike Daniels helped us out with the Small Business Development Council. And those two entities had a 9-person cohort who participated in developing their own products and a business plan, and were able to put products on the online site that is operated by the Small Business Development Council. So that was a real good push in the end of this for the participants to get exposure to entrepreneurship. So much of the program, we were trying to get employers to accept them for work experience, and it was just very difficult during COVID. So we made that shift to entrepreneurship, and it was a really exciting and innovative idea for them to participate in. So at least we concluded the program with a bang there. In conclusion, of the 72 participants that were in the program, 57 of them were transitioned. Their files were transitioned to the one-stop center, and they were assigned, the 57 were assigned case managers to continue career and training services at the one-stops since the grant timeframe is over. Any questions about the program?
I don't have any questions, but your co-enrollment numbers are pretty good. You know, that's a good amount. And so that's good to see.
Yeah, at the end, part of our closeout activities were to have online orientations for all of the participants so they could get online. And the one-stop case managers and the Goodwill managers were all on Zoom together to have an orientation for the participants so they could get used to the idea of staying with a program and moving on to a new case manager that we were able to introduce them to, kind of give them a warm handoff to a different part of the program.
That's good. Good job on that one.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Adriana. I'd like to move on to the Veterans Employment Program. I'm going to ask for Eric to take the lead.
Good afternoon, everyone.
We can hear you.
Okay. I can barely see my screen. I'm co-located at Los Alamitos today. Thank you for having us here today. I do have a brief presentation because we do have a PowerPoint with some numbers, and I think Anthony Rafik, our career coordinator, was going to present some of that. So we can enlarge the screen a bit. I can hardly see that one. There we go. Thank you. So this report is for the fourth quarter with us. And can you scroll down a bit? Thank you. So far, for our total number of enrollments we've had for this period, the fourth quarter, 80 enrollments. We were scheduled to have 110. We came up with 73% of our performance goals as far as total enrollments. Our soft skills training, we're at 30%. I think soft skills has been one of the most challenging ones, and I think it was previously mentioned earlier about soft skills and getting to our one stop for those workshops and soft skills. And also many of our veterans that we have seen have been preparing their soft skills through our transition assistance program. So they're a little more developed in getting ahead of that before they get to us. So they've been a little bit of a slowdown, but I think we are ramping up with a lot more of those that have significant barriers to employment who actually needs those introductory skills. We had 12% of our enrollments were in occupational skills training. Although we were scheduled for 90 based on our planned performance, again, this is one of those areas where a lot of our veterans are taking many of their transferable skills that they've learned through military training, but some are already in some sort of occupational training before they get to us and just need a lot of those direct supportive services to get into employment. As you can see, work-based learning and training is at 0%. Again, this is one of those areas that has been an ongoing challenge to try and get veterans who are, one, interested in on-the-job training or some sort of apprenticeship. We are working with our Helmets to Hard Hats and several of our local apprenticeship unions who are interested in recruiting veterans, trying to make it so that we have a nice little pipeline through Helmets to Hard Hats to try and get veterans in places like the Teamsters Union, as well as the construction trades. This period, we only had one who obtained their certificate, and part of that is we relate to a lot of the longevity of the training periods to get those certificates. We do have several members who are taking advantage of their earned benefits through the VA to complete a degree program. So less likely to try and get into a certificate program right away and trying to reserve some of that for after they've completed some of their degree training. We're at 63% of our planned goal for unsubsidized employment. Again, I think this is one of those areas where we tend to thrive most of all because many of our veterans need that extra boost, maybe some basic career services, but looking for that immediacy as far as getting into the workforce. And with the medium hourly rate, we have a large percent of our veterans who are earning an average of $31 an hour, well above. And some of the areas are in healthcare as well as tech and our advanced manufacturing. Can you scroll down, please? Okay. Right there. As previously mentioned, so some of our challenges in work-based learning, I do think that from speaking with our colleagues, opportunities for matching veterans and with employers' demands has been a huge focal point with trying to get veterans into those in-demand careers. I think Anthony has a PowerPoint presentation that he's going to present. If we can just scroll down a bit. Participant outreach. This has been, I think, our strongest suit. We're probably interviewing about 40 to 50 candidates per month. I know the last quarter, we enrolled about 36 new participants. Our outreach and being co-located at both the Garden Grove Workforce Center as well as Los Alamitos, and plus connections at the VA healthcare system has expanded our reach to one, build capacity with those organizations, but being on the base and being present, allowing access to our family readiness centers for soldiers and their families, as well as to the reserves and National Guard. Here at Los Alamitos, we have a constant stream of folks coming in to inquire about training, possibly upskills, as well as access to employers. Scroll down, please. Keep going. Co-enrollments. So we've had about 24 co-enrollments with our partners with MCS. Again, I think as Zitlock had mentioned earlier, some of the challenges trying to get and coordinate veterans getting access for those assessments. We've had a bit of a slowdown with trying to connect, but there is quite a few referrals being made, but also connecting many of our veterans with significant barriers to employment who have a a greater than 30% service-connected injury that contributes to a significant barrier to employment. So working with our disabled veterans outreach program coordinators and our leavers to try and get them connected to employers, as well as working or leveraging some case management and mentorship opportunities with veterans.
Eric, do you have anybody that was co-enrolled with the JVSG program?
Yes, I believe, Anthony, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we have 8.
Oh, good. That's good
that
to hear.
That were co-enrolled during this last quarter.
That's good to hear.
And again, I know that there's a little bit of transitioning and slowdown going on, but we do receive a ton of collaboration. We do have monthly meetings with Abraham and his team to try and coordinate access. So there's a lot of leveraging with that coordination.
Yeah, we're in the process. I think we're in the process of hiring additional 2 DBOTs and a leaver, I want to say.
Yes.
So we should have some staff hopefully cleared soon.
Awesome. Thank you. We can scroll down. There, okay. So we recently was fully staffed. We did have one of our career coordinators depart, so it's still Anthony and myself. As far as actual expenditures, we're a little over 100% of our planned expenditures for this period. Again, we haven't had the need to provide a lot of supportive services to a lot of our veterans because they're getting employment right away and or they haven't completed part of our financial money matters class to be able to allow us to help them and see where their greatest needs are. Again, many are already service connected, so they haven't seen a drastic need to require us to help them with anything financially to help them get into the workforce at this point in time. Scroll down some more, please. Lessons learned. If we could scroll back down for a bit. There we are. We have one of our success stories about a veteran who was not able to be here today due to his work schedule. But as you can read here, trying to get veterans are usually coming in with advanced degrees who are just needing a little hand up and navigating through the workforce. Part of the mentorship that the career coordinators and I start out with is trying to make sure we can align the veteran skills currently with the right type of employer, particularly when they're underpaid at some level or are experiencing barriers to getting to a certain industry sector that they desire. Scroll up a bit. Down. Okay, that's it. Lessons learned. Our expansion enhancement, again, has been very helpful. I think targeting some of our non-traditional partners in the community and getting to where veterans are. I think that's been a very helpful trend for us to get to our numbers. I'm pretty confident that we'll definitely meet or exceed our planned performance goals surrounding the work-based learning. I think that's one of the challenges that we're working with our business solutions team to try and make sure that we can connect potential OJTs with the right type of veteran to meet that workforce need. And that's it for me. I think Anthony has a PowerPoint that he wants to.
I believe we have Anthony lower in the agenda.
Okay.
Yes, we can move on.
Okay.
That's
all I have, if there's any questions.
Good job, Eric. Glad to hear that things are working out with the co-enrollment and all that. That's good.
Great job.
So I wonder if we should do a time check. We have about a half hour left, and there's quite a bit left on the agenda. Were we able to get another person to join to get quorum?
Yes, we do have the fifth person available.
Okay, so I wonder if we should, Karma, go back and do the three action items with 30 minutes left, and then with the remaining time, try to get back into the information items. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. So if we go back, then the first action item, I'm going to try to make it as fast as I can, like hit the facts. So as you remember, we are required to do an excellence. We're required to do a hallmark of excellence review of our one-stop system. So we're supposed to go out and evaluate our affiliates, our comprehensive center, and many of you as board members went out and visited these facilities, and then you kind of rolled up observations. And as a result of those observations, there's supposed to be a continuing improvement plan developed by the one-stop operator. So as you remember, we submitted to the state kind of our review of everything where we stood, and now we're required to submit to the state our updates with the continuous improvement plan. I want to scroll ahead. So in order to make the best of the time, what I'd like to do is have our one-stop operator kind of review his recommendations. So everyone has a copy of the actual site location and what the board members wrote up, right, as what they've observed and what they'd like to see improved. And then it's responsibility of our operator to create an improvement plan to take all of those things into consideration and make our facilities better. So with that said, let's go ahead, Desiree, skip down this page because this is just the policy, the directive by EDD. We don't need to go through that. Why don't we go to the very first improvement program? Scroll down a little bit longer, a little bit more. One more. Mm. All right, here's the first one. So this was the indicator assessment. Desiree, can you scroll down a little bit more so I can see which one this one? Okay, so this is the one for the Comprehensive Center at Garden Grove. And Desiree, I want to scroll ahead to the last page. So the board members evaluated that facility. These are the write-ups from the board members. Wait a minute. Go back up a little bit. Let me see. Is it getting to that? So this was a continuous improvement plan, right? And then there's the section where the operator chimes in on what his plan is to support what we want, right? So with that said, let me get through to which page it is. I'm sorry. I printed out all these pages and it's a lot. So I'm so sorry. I'm trying to get to that page fast so that we can get to the page that he can start speaking on. Keep scrolling. Oh, there it is. Wait a minute. I think I see what's happening. We didn't have title page for the title page is missing for reception, so that's why it's okay. Got you. Let me try to catch up because when I printed it out, the page numbers didn't follow.
Yeah.
Hold on just a second, Desiree. I'm so sorry. The page numbers didn't. And it might be easier since Giovanni wrote this to actually have him. Okay, yeah, so if we go to, let's see, it's gonna be on page, it's not easy. You're too far down. Go back up, and I'm so sorry, I don't have the page numbers. Let me try to open it up digitally so I can skip through a little bit faster. Let's see, that's 12 indicators. Mm. Okay, so page 14, Desiree. I'm so sorry. I've now helped. So let's go to page 14. So this on page 14 at the bottom is the continuous improvement plan right here. Yep, is the continuous improvement plan that we work with the one-stop operator provided as we provided opportunities, and it was his role to give us the improvement plan. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and let Giovanni kind of kick off with what his improvements are and kind of how you arrived to that. And you guys can ask him any questions or concerns that you might have.
Mm-hmm. Good afternoon, everybody. How are we doing?
Hi. Good.
Great. Thank you very much for being here today. So with the improvement plan, these are pretty much based off of observations I made at each site. What I've seen here at the center, over at the foundation, the Orangewood Foundation Center, and I believe also the Los Alamitos Center as well. A few of the questions that were asked up here, and based off those questions, I kind of gave my feedback for the improvement. So starting with the, let me pull up my page right here as well. With the combined center, some of the improvements I had recommended was acquiring new signage. Well, we had acquired new signage for clients and customers coming to the center. And a lot of the times that people, when they would Google us, they might see EDD only. And so there'd be a lot of confusion with folks coming in. However, that also helped us to capture a lot of new clients coming in, thinking that we only provided UI services, but when they come in, we let them know that we can provide them job placement opportunities, case management, things of that nature. So it actually worked out to our favor as well. But folks walking off the street, having the signage out in the public's view definitely helped them a lot. New signage at the stairwells, showing people exactly where to go. I know some of our tenants downstairs had made some complaints that, you know, people were coming into their offices thinking that they were either at EDD or the One Stop itself. So that's definitely helped out a lot. Having the county EO officer, Nakia Theory, and reviews for EO policies. We have those placed around the resource room and on my office. So folks know who to contact for any type of EO violations. We also have a proper grievance procedures that we provide to the public as well. The operator will conduct quarterly training with the staff on customer service and conflict resolution. So I get together with my staff. We talk about some of the events that we've had here with clients, what we can do to improve, what are some of the best practices we've observed. And we also get, you know, we ask the other agencies if they, you know, have any types of good tips and tricks that they can share with us. That way we can continue to perform the best that we can. Continue to move down, please. Scroll a little bit more.
Giovanni, before we move on, I have to make sure that the board members understand what they're voting on. So they're voting to approve your continuous improvement plan. So let me scroll, go back to page 14, Desiree. So on page 14 above, where scroll a little bit more. So this was the continuous improvement opportunities identified by board members. So we compiled all of the results, right? And we put up three items that we thought as a board needed to be improved in our workforce system. Giovanni's role is to take a look at what we said and put together a plan. And then based on his plan, we're supposed to agree to it or ask him to go back and work at it. But we're going to submit to the state that this is what Giovanni's working on and that we're overseeing his work towards making these improvements. So I just want to make sure before we scroll through all of this, that you guys understand what we're saying. So this is going to go from this board to the executive committee, to the full board, and then I'm going to submit it to the state. And it is our responsibility to ensure that these actions have been taken and that we've put systems in place to improve the quality of service delivery.
I just want to clarify. When you say EO, it's equal opportunity policies as opposed to the EEO?
It's equal opportunity, yeah. So it's,
yes.
So, but honestly, it needs to be both, to be honest with you. So there's EOO, and then there's equal opportunity, making sure that people can go into our system, receive service delivery without interruptions, free to everyone in the community, right? And then there is the hiring practices. So there's that. There's two sides of this. So I just wanna make sure that we're clear on the two sides of this. So Nakia is the EO officer for the workforce for the county, but she supports our workforce development program. But in the facility, we have to have practices in place to ensure fair service delivery for the participants and clients and for the workers within the facility.
Okay.
Question, is this just related to the facilities, my reason for my question is my concern I keep bringing up about virtual and the need for virtual reach out. Is that missing in this plan, or is this purely focused on the brick and mortar facilities?
So that's a great question. It can be a combination. If you want to improve the quality of service delivery and you want to do that, yes, but then no, because you got to remember the one-stop operator only has one part of that responsibility, right? So he's, so there's a side of the one-stop operator that manages the locations, right? And then he makes sure training is available to all of our partners. And then you've got the other side with like the MCS who engage with participants and service delivery on that end. So that's not that. I want to make sure you're clear. So when we read that report earlier and Rob highlighted that there was a bunch of virtual trainings done.
Yeah.
That is Giovanni providing training for any of our system partners or anybody that walks into the one-stop center. That's not MCS's training. Although MCS may offer the participants access to that training, it's kind of two different things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I really appreciate that clarification. I don't know that I understood that.
Okay. All right, scroll a little bit up, Desiree, so they can see based off this is what we came up with. This is what Giovanni is offering to put into place as a solution to what we asked for.
Is that in line with what we're seeing other workforce groups doing as well?
Well, we're all required to do it. So every workforce area is supposed to evaluate their system and make improvement plans. I don't think that other necessary systems have the same issues we do because a lot of them have locations they've been in for 50 years, right? So they don't have the problem with people knowing that they exist or signage. We kind of have that challenge because of course we change our name. And we are currently in a building that, to be honest with you, we're going to be moving eventually, right?
Right.
So is he right that signage is kind of a challenge? Yeah, but at the same time, we'll be leaving that facility within the next 14 months.
Oh.
Yeah, but I can tell you that across the state, the workforce system is still the best kept secret. You can go from one county to another and you ask any private employer and they still are surprised to know that we do this.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think your improvement plan at least addresses what was identified. So we should be able to at least, you know, go get ahead of that hurdle there.
Okay, I'm gonna keep things moving. So we're going to skip to page 16, Desiree, so they can look at the next improvement plan, the observation plan. So if we scroll down a little bit more. So this continuous improvement, a little bit up. Okay. So this was the continuous improvement opportunity identified. And below that is the continuous improvement plan identified by Giovanni for our workforce system. This location, let's see, which location is this one? We're missing the cover page to it, I apologize.
I believe it's the Garden Grove.
The Garden Grove was number one. So this is the second location. But the location, wait a minute. I feel like the location this highlight is missing. Yeah, there's seems to be, maybe not. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe this still is Garden Grove. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Look, it's just my pages as they printed out are kind of wonky.
The next one starts on page 35. Karma, do you want me to go to that one?
No, this is still a part of the improvement plan that they're voting on to approve. So this is the next section of it.
Okay, so for the continuous improvement plan, based off the opportunities that we had here, some of the opportunities were to continue train staff, all partner services available within the one-stop system and not limited to each service provider's program, ensure that AJCC staff partners are effectively used in the CalJobs referral process and follow-ups to ensure that services have been provided where necessary, develop and ensure flyers listing all partner services are available to AJCC distribution, improve marketing and outreach methods, especially post-pandemic, and continue to establish partnerships in the community. Partners expressed concern over using the survey tool SurveyMonkey. Another survey platform will be explored for the continuous improvement plan. The operator continues to train on all partners and services available within the one-stop system. Partners continue to use CalJobs referral process and follow-ups. The operator continues to receive county developed, controlled, and issued flyers. Operator ensures that said flyers are posted in the center as well as shared with the partners. The county controls all aspects of marketing methods, and the county continues to use the survey tool SurveyMonkey. Do we have any questions with these improvement plans?
The only question
if people are expressing concern about SurveyMonkey then we're saying we're going to continue it, is it with the caveat until another tool is identified, or why would we continue if people are expressing concern?
I know I've annotated in my reporting before that people are a lot more willing to provide surveys through pen and paper that we have posted here in the resource room and in the main lobby area. Also, they're very happy to send out emails. And I always ask folks, you know, if they get a job or they have a positive change in their life because of the OC Workforce Solutions Center, they can send me an email. So when I get those emails, I submit that to the county for their review. The biggest caveat with SurveyMonkey, although it is a very useful tool, it seems that a lot of the clients, when they come in, they want to use the resource room for looking for work, checking their emails, filling out applications. And then when the SurveyMonkey comes up, for them, it's a bit of a nuisance. So, you know, and we encourage them to continue
Understand all that. So what I'm asking is, why are we saying as an improvement plan is we're going to continue to use it? Why aren't we saying we're going to use other options or something? And that's the disconnect here.
Right. Those options, I believe, would be coming from the county. And however they would guide us in that method, we would implement here at the center.
So, Barbara, on the opportunity that we listed above, we said another survey platform will be explored, and we can certainly explore that. We were looking for the operator to kind of highlight some other platforms that can be explored. Here's why we have to do a digital survey. We have to, because the one-stop operator, currently the one-stop operator contract is a cost plus performance, right? So I have to be able to identify how do we collect those surveys and keep them honest so that I can submit it to the state and DOL when we get ready to make a performance payment to the one-stop operator. So I can't use paper and I can't use emails, because how do I know that it was an open opportunity for everyone and demonstrate that the data that we collected actually is tied to somebody that's real. So that's why. So when we recreated this contract that had this cost plus performance, we had to identify how will we manage it? How will we keep up with the data? How will we ensure that transparency is happening? And a digital survey was identified. Now we can use any kind of platform, but it has to be something.
Yeah, to document. I understand.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering why we wouldn't phrase it. It's kind of like we're saying we hear what people are saying, they don't like it, and then we're saying our plan is to continue with what they don't like. Is there a way we could caveat this with we will continue to use SurveyMonkey and other options, or something indicating we heard what they said and we're going to make some changes?
Absolutely. We leave that to the operator to determine that. So remember, we bring the areas of concern to the operator, and it is his job to provide us guidance on what can we use. So it would have been for the operator to explore other platforms that were more suitable than SurveyMonkey. So there are other platforms, like you get a text to your phone or—
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, so we could have explored that, but we're looking for the operator to give us that guidance.
My team and I can continue to look on that. Okay. Were there any other questions with this portion of the text? Okay, if we can please scroll down.
Well, I have to go back to the county controls all aspects of marketing methods, because that's not 100% true. And so I want to make sure that when we're talking about the operator and the operator providing feedback or support or guidance on improving the system, we can't say that to the state. So I just want to highlight there's some areas that I can't highlight. I'm trying to allow the operator to do his job, but at the same time, I know you can't send that to the state. You have to have a solution. And we don't control all aspects of marketing. We help develop it, but But we asked you to outreach, provide outreach to your network, to all the participants, to all the partners. So I think that you might want to reevaluate that one as well.
So should we remove it from the improvement plan? And
no, I think you leave it on the, so this board said, I'd like for you to improve marketing and outreach methods, especially post-pandemic, and continue to establish partnerships in the community. So it is the operator's job to decide how he's going to do that. And it can't be the answer, the county controls it.
So we need to find.
Reword it.
Verbiage. Yeah.
Oh, you need to reword that bullet.
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like these are ready to go to the full board. It feels like they need a little massaging.
Tweaking, yeah. I mean, it would be the operator controls all aspects of their own marketing.
And so, yeah, so what
is in the contract? Is it per contract the operator is responsible for that?
We develop it for them. So because outreach is one of those things that marketing is not usually allowable, right? So what we try to do is we rebranded the system. Remember, we hired that third-party marketing firm to kind of help us rebrand our name. We've got all of these flyers that they developed. We're developing a new website. We've got those brochures. So there's collateral created. So we're not asking the operator create collateral for us. We're saying, we'll develop the collateral. We need you to get it out there. We need you to develop relationships in the community so that people come to us. So that's two different things. So there's collateral, which we do, but then there's a responsibility of the operator to go out and develop relationships and bring people into our system. The operator's job is not only to engage with potential partners and bring partners in the system, but it's to go out into community and talk about what the center is and how to utilize the center.
Distribute the marketing tools.
Correct. I'm going to keep, because I'm trying to keep us on time. So I'm going to scroll to the next
section. Yeah, I hear you say that there needs,
there's more work, but I don't know if we want to just ask him to go back and kind of reevaluate this, or you want to continue to go through all of them.
Well, we only have 14 minutes and we have two other actions to get through.
Okay. So I guess maybe we can ask him to go back and then.
I think so.
Okay. So now we'll have him go back. So what I think I hear you say is we're not ready to submit this to the next level. We will reevaluate this at the next board meeting.
What does the rest of the committee think?
It sounds to me like, you just need to reword or work on wordsmithing some of the improvements so that there is no contradiction about what the county's role is versus what the operator's role is. And then the board could be very clear about what will be improved and who's in charge of it.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Now, I don't know if that could be wordsmithed before the board meeting and it could be brought to the board then if there's a time constraint, but it just doesn't feel crisp to approve right now.
I agree.
Okay. So what I think I hear you say, it's not ready to move on, that we would like the operator to go back and take another look at it and try to work on an improvement plan that we can.
And it may not be that they're having to redo their points. It's the wording of them, I think, and the way it's.
Of some of the bullets, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the way it's worded.
Okay. So we'll remove this item and we will resubmit it at a future board member for future board meeting for consideration, but we'll take it to this committee first.
Yeah.
Is there any sort of time issue like that we would want to get it to the board?
Well, so we sent this to the operator. I don't know if you guys remember this, but we sent it to the operator back in January and we just now got it back. Yeah. So I'm going to have to kind of give him a 30-day turnaround and then we might have to call a special meeting.
Yeah.
Is there any way they could, we're not talking about major systemic changes here. We're talking about just crisping up the language, getting rid of the disconnect. Is there any way they could do that and bring that to the board?
Do you want them to bring it to the board without you reviewing and approving it? Because remember, this is under this committee.
I think we should do what you said, maybe have them reword it. We can have a special meeting to approve it. Then we take it to the full board.
Yeah.
Could we do a special meeting of the right before the full board? I'm just trying to avoid this, 30 days, then it's 60 days. And then, is there any way they could modify it. We could maybe do a 15-minute meeting right before the full board, approve it, and then take it to the full board. Is that possible?
Possibly, but if you don't like it in that 15-minute meeting, same outcome.
Yeah, I think the changes, at least from my perspective, and I'd like to hear from the other committee members, are not really changing what they're suggesting. It's the language. It's the way it's written and the clarifications needed.
Yeah.
But you haven't gone through the whole document, so I don't know. Like, you went
Okay, so maybe we're not ready.
We're not. It doesn't sound like it. Yeah.
Okay, we're not. I'm just so concerned about us delaying, but if we're not ready, we're not ready. And so hopefully next time we have a quorum up front and we can really get through this and not feel so rushed, because I'm feeling like we got 10 more minutes and we got still two more action items here.
I agree. So I'm going to pull this item. I'm going to ask the one-stop operator goes back and reevaluates the responses and comes up with responses that are more in alignment with what was asked. And then we'll represent it to this committee.
You know, my Outlook invite for the meeting says from 1 to 3, not from 1 to 2:30.
Yeah, so does mine.
Mine says 2:30.
Mine says till three.
It's typically till three.
Oh no, it is. I'm sorry. It is till three. You're right. Sorry. We do have time.
Okay. How would you want to proceed?
So my suggestion is maybe we send it back to the operator, have them reword it, like Barbara said, crisp it up a little bit. And then we can have a special 15-minute meeting, just the one stop to approve it, or we send it back before we go to full board.
And is 30 days just enough? I mean, I think we can shorten it.
Well, okay.
Yeah, with the changes that we're discussing, it's not building it from scratch per se, and I realize we haven't dived deep into the document. I think I would shorten the window to maybe 10 days, like a 2-week turnaround essentially.
I don't think you can do that. Here's why. So action items go from this committee to exec and then from exec to full board. So what you're saying is to bypass exec, and I'm not sure if we can do that, so I have to ask county council.
So you're saying that 30 days is built around that?
No, I'm saying that here's the issue. The next executive committee meeting is next week. The full board meeting is on the 24th. What I hear you say is that, Carmen, we want to try to do it before the next full board meeting. Excuse me, the full board meeting is on the 25th.
Mm-hmm.
Zek's next week. So unless he can get it, you can have a special meeting next week before exec, that you agree with it, then it goes to exec, and then from the exec, it goes to the full board. So he'd have to be able to do it between now and before exec when you have your special meeting.
And I was, quorum. Yeah, I know that's something we had thrown out, but I think I was more so just trying to keep the process going. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't, for this piece of it anyways, the changes that need to be made to not go on a 30-day timeline to shorten that, just so we keep the process going quicker, but not necessarily to align with being approved by the next board meeting.
I guess we should really focus on quality over focus, you know, rushing it. And so if it takes them more time. How much more of this is, now that I know we have until 3:00 and not 2:30, sorry about that. Are we able to get through the rest of this, or is there, but I guess we would still want them to make these changes.
Right. So let me explain to you where we are. So this started on page 11 and it goes down to page, give me a second. Still not done. Minute 70s, hold on, 80, 90, 98.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a lot. Yeah, we probably need them to come back, and they need to go back and look at it. I don't know, maybe sometimes, you know, when you work on something yourself, it's hard and you need a different set of eyes. They maybe need someone else to look at it and see if it makes sense. But I mean, all of us on the committee immediately saw things that didn't seem to connect.
I'll let their CEO, what I'll do is I'll send back a note to their CEO and see if there's someone else that can work with the operator on it, but it's not supposed to be me. So our staff is supposed to be,
So my question is, do we continue to read through them so we can, if there's anything else we catch along the way, they can fix those too before they bring it back to us?
It's up for you guys to decide how you want to use the rest of today's meeting. You got roughly about 35 minutes left.
Yeah.
How much are the items 6 and 7? Are they as meaty and involved as number 5?
No, they're not.
Okay, then maybe we could keep going a bit.
Okay. All right. So, Desiree, we are on, what are we in, 19 right now, Desiree?
We're on page 16.
16. Oh,
16.
All right, let's scroll ahead to 19. All right. So here there are two continuous improvement opportunities we identified as the workforce board, and then there are two improvement plans developed by the operator. So it says that AJCC staff need to be cross-trained in partner eligibility and services and can offer the benefit from customer-centered design training. The training should be expected at minimum and annually. So that's number one. And so his response back is AJCC staff continues to train in partner eligibility and services. It did not address the second part. So this one, I don't think fully matches what we asked for. We said two things, that they need to be trained on all the other partner programs and their eligibility, but then also customer-centered design training. That wasn't addressed in his response, so he needs to address that. The next observation, COVID-19 disruptions caused a lot of services. We'll begin to transition back to normalcy post-pandemic. AJCC staff needs to work on improving their outreach, including marketing to align their service delivery with other partners. His answer was county controls all aspects of marketing. Well, that obviously is not a suitable answer. He has to define how he's going to help bring people back into the center since the pandemic is over. Are you okay with my, okay, so we'll scroll to the next.
Yeah, agree.
Okay, all right, scroll to the next. So Desiree, that's gonna be 22. All right, so in this one, there's 4 areas that we identified. Number one is provide staff ongoing training on regional sector career pathways to keep knowledge current. Number two, was AJCC offers training and releases monthly calendar. However, there needs to be better communicated with and shared with one-stop system partners. Number three is AJCC needs to engage with business solutions team to identify potential OJTs beneficial to customers. It says it appears that the operator is disconnected from the area and is often led by service providers. And then the last one is that AJCC can also benefit from developing and maintaining a resource directory of services available through other agencies and community-based organizations. His response was only one, and it says the county controls all aspects of business solutions outreach. The operator should be involved with business solutions outreach. That's not a suitable answer for those
questions. No, I agree. That's inadequate. If the rest of them are like this, this is not ready.
Was there, I don't know. Seems like it was rushed.
Yeah, this is just, it's almost like two different people wrote the things. It's really a disconnect.
Right. So we wrote the part, so I'm clear, the continuous improvement opportunities is this board collectively deciding what needed to be fixed.
Right. Who wrote the continuous improvement plan?
That would be the operator. It's his job to say what he's going to do to fix the things that you guys have identified above.
So that's inadequate. That is the generic, conceptual statement. There's no plan there.
Yeah, there's no how.
Exactly. No, exactly. That's just a very generic statement. That's not a plan.
All right, so let's go to 25.
Who's the operator that did this?
Giovanni, so the gentleman.
I am, ma'am. I can make a comment on all this. During the transition from Maritza Sanchez was leaving the county, she had mentioned before about this improvement plan, and this was conducted with Joe Faustina, the previous director here. So back in December, as she was January, I believe, and she was ready to leave,
She told me that this was going to be something I was going to be working with the county on. I had communicated some information with Javier in regards to this because I wasn't quite sure what the plan was for this. So I just picked it up and did the best that I could with it without any real, real guidance on the matter. So I submitted this back originally in February, early February, when I completed it. And I haven't heard anything back in regards to that since. So I know Javier was kind of like my main point of contact after Marissa left. So had I been given the opportunity to maybe have some counseling, you know, explain to me how I could improve this prior, I would have been more than happy to do so.
Mm. Well, that's helpful, that background. So it needs to be a more coordinated effort.
So
more collaborative.
Barbara, can I put some input? I don't know that all the information he's provided is accurate. The one-stop operator's job is supposed to be an expert, subject matter expert at improving and providing quality service through the system. I know for sure that Giovanni was provided this because when Maritza left, I kind of went back through and said, hey, Giovanni, Maritza, I saw the email that she said she sat down and met with them and went over all of this with them. And then I asked, well, what's the status of it? He said that he was working on it. That was back a while ago. So then I came back again and said, what's the status on it? He said that he's going to have it to me by a certain date. I recently asked for a copy of it. I got a copy of it. This is what's submitted to the board. So I didn't see, there was at no point anything sent to me saying, I don't understand this. I think that the areas of concern are pretty obvious. Like it says really high, like right there, what's wrong. And I think that the operator should have been able to give us a response back, appropriate response back of what he can do to improve it. There is this expectation. It's never been unclear what the role of the operator is. It's in his contract. I know that Marissa has gone over every section of that contract with Giovanni and the previous operator, as well as their CEO. So I don't think that it's a situation of guidance not being given. I think that it may be something else, but I don't think it's guidance not being given. And I think it's pretty clear because a copy of this whole write-up was provided to him. So it's not as if he didn't see the continuous improvement opportunities. And I do have documentation from Marissa when she sat down and reviewed it with me.
I appreciate those comments as well. The more we go through this, I don't think we're ready. And what we were saying about 5 or 10 minutes ago about trying to get it done and get it to the board, we're not ready.
It
seems to go from specificity in the improvement opportunities to less specificity and very generic plans, which it feels like it should be the other way around. We should see a lot more depth in what the go forward plan is.
I agree. So I think that that's the problem is that if we, the role of the operator is to ensure that whatever you see is wrong with the system, that they're working towards fixing it and that we're holding them accountable to it. So once he puts together a plan, it is our responsibility to go back through after we submit it to the state and ensure that Giovanni and his staff have implemented all the things that we've identified so we can improve the quality services delivered.
Yeah.
Karma?
Yes.
So for clarification sake going forward, with getting this document to where it needs to be, is the operator able to reach out to your team if they have questions, if they're not clear on something to make this, and like I said, get it to where it needs to be?
They are, but remember, we're not supposed to be writing it. So remember, we're supposed to be kind of, I don't know what you call it.
Neutral. Here you go. This is what we've observed. These are where we've identified the opportunities. Please provide a response.
Right.
And I guess,
So if he asked me, reached out to me and said, Karma, it says, I don't know, customer-centered design. What does that mean? Right? I would have said, oh, Giovanni, here's what customer-centered design. Here's somebody who offers it. In fact, some of the things that we identified in here, we actually made available to Giovanni's staff. So some of the trainings, we made available. I actually had a conversation, Rob, you can attest to it, where we talked to him about how we wanted his staff to be cross-trained on all the programs that were delivered in the one-stop center. I even took out the kiosk where they were just having people self-sign in because that's not how the center is supposed to be operating. It's supposed to be where I engage with each customer comes through the door and I share with them all the services that are available that are applicable to that person. So there are things that we've done that he didn't mention in here that he's actually doing, that we kind of helped guide towards doing it, right? So I do think that, yes, we can provide him some information on what we mean, but also there's some things that have already been done that he just didn't document in some cases, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is anything that identifies what a continuous improvement opportunity is, the answer should always start with the how.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to ensure training for staff on regional economy, labor market conditions, and business talent? Mm-hmm. So that's how your answer should go.
Yeah.
And if you don't answer how in the bottom part, then it's not clear yet. Yeah.
Right. Like an acknowledgement of the point that and the how. But there was also several points made throughout of, I guess, a viewpoint that the county does this or controls this. So I think those are definitely points to get clarification around.
They need to be correct and accurate.
Yeah, that if that's the response kind of that was felt was correct, and we've identified that that's not the case, I think those are definitely points to go back and get clarification on.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first we need to make sure the information's accurate, and then we need to say, is it conveying the direction we think it should be going, and is it really a plan? And until then, we're not ready to bring it to the board.
Yeah,
I agree. Do you guys want me to continue?
I think we can see that it needs to be relooked at.
Yeah.
Maybe we should move on to the other action items.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So then, Desiree, can we move to the action item 2? All right. So I'm going to try to speed through this as much as I can. So this is for the establishment of apprenticeship policy. As you well know, we do not currently have any apprenticeship programs in our community. This allows us to create non-traditional apprenticeships. So this is where we might set up an apprenticeship in, I don't know, IT or in the airline industry, but we go out and meet with employers and help design apprenticeship opportunities. In order for us to do that, we have to identify what do we mean by an apprenticeship? How does it work? How are they paid? And what supports we'll have in place for the employer as we develop that apprenticeship program. I want to highlight just a couple of things about it. So this identifies the OJT part of an apprenticeship. So there's the part, let me take 2 steps back. So that we're all clear, if we go to visit an employer, let's say Xerox, and we want to design an apprenticeship program, we either talk to Xerox about them doing the training in-house and getting their in-house training approved by DOL or California Apprenticeship Standards, or we work with a Xerox to find a college like Saddleback College that has a training part of it, but then Xerox has the work part of it, and we merge that together. We help them create that registered apprenticeship program. So this policy is to basically go over how that will work, the training part of it, how does that get reimbursed, and how is it paid, the OJT part of it, which is the payment part where we reimburse the employer for the training portion of it, how that works. The other thing, because our traditional OJTs typically last about less than 6 months, apprenticeships can last years. And so because our funding is limited, right, we need to kind of identify as a workforce area, how long will we pay for an apprenticeship program? So this is establishing standards for our local workforce area on that. It is also establishing standards for our pre-apprenticeship program. So how will we create pre-apprenticeship programs that feed the apprenticeship pipeline? It also goes over when a service provider is engaging with a participant and putting them in apprenticeship, what codes will they need to use in CalJobs so that they appropriately document the opportunity. Are there any questions or concerns? I'm trying to make sure you guys get it. And so what I'm asking,
we've talked about apprenticeship program for a while here.
We have. And so this policy would help us start developing. We do have one that we want, that we have, we're working on with an organization called Career Coders. And so once we get this policy established, we'll be able to work with them to develop a registered apprenticeship program locally and other employers.
Good, good.
Yeah, I don't have any questions.
No, it seems like going in the direction we've been talking about.
I agree.
So we need, this is an item that requires a vote.
I'll move to approve the item.
I will second that.
Second.
So then Desiree, okay.
I'll do a roll call vote. Rob Claudio.
Aye.
Mike Daniel. Chris Horton.
Aye.
Barbara Mason.
Aye.
Gary Mackin. Carlos Aragon.
Aye.
Michael Ruin. And Brinell Tumor Bias.
Aye.
And that is majority chair.
All right. The next action item is, can we scroll to the next page? It's for conference meeting training event request policy. So as you will know, a lot of our service providers have been in the community for a very long time. And they've established meetings that they go to, community events that they're involved in on our behalf. And a lot of times we don't even know that they're doing it. So what this policy helps us to do is figure out, like, if they are going to a conference meeting, training, or event, that we are aware of it when they're representing us, so that we're not duplicating efforts and we're cleaning up the confusion in the community. There are several meetings that I went to that I'm going out representing the workforce system, and the person I'm engaging with thinks that the one-stop operator or the Title I career service provider is somebody completely different. It's all us, right? So what I want to try to do is make sure that people are clear when we're talking to the community about the Orange County Workforce Development Board, the OC Workforce Solution Center.
It's alignment. You're aligning everybody.
Exactly. So this policy basically helps our service providers with identifying when they're going out representing us and letting us know in advance so that we know what they're doing, so they're not duplicating efforts or creating more.
Oh, yeah.
In the
community. A couple of questions on this. Have you had service providers that met with elected officials that were that indicated they were representing the county?
I've had service providers who meet with elected officials that I had no idea that they were meeting with them, and it created a little bit of problems. Wow. I've had service providers in the last 3 years that have gone out to like programs that I'm working on, like in the jail or the Orangewood or some organization that I'm talking to them, and they think that there's somebody completely different and it's us, right? So it makes it look like we don't have our act together when I'm talking to them, and neither of us, like, I don't know that you're engaging with them. There are also service providers that sit on chambers and participate in chamber meetings. I had no idea. And honestly, it should be us, because we're offering more than just the workforce
programs.
We're offering business solutions, OJTs, apprenticeships, homeless tax credits. It's a lot of stuff that we represent that I think that it's causing a little bit of friction in what we do.
Okay. And then I understand that part, but I do think the 45 days prior to an event, that may be unreasonable, because a lot of events sometimes, especially if they're by an elected official, they're very last minute.
Oh, I know. So that's why we have that second sentence that says, as soon as you know. So we'd like 45 days, but as soon as you know.
Okay. And then similarly, the approval for that is 30 days?
Or as soon as you know. So for example, I know you're right, Rob. I've had a lot of last minute karmic come over here.
I think that's the norm. I think that's the norm with elected officials.
Right. So in those situations, as soon as you know, but when you're planning an event for elected official, I need to know you're planning that event, because we might not be able to participate in that.
Yeah. And if you do, it would be you as your own entity, not as representing the county.
Exactly. Yeah. Or the Workforce Development Board, right.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. Then I'm okay with that.
Is there any concern with the content of what they're communicating? This is more the mechanism.
Well,
is there any concern with what they're saying on behalf of the county?
Sometimes there is.
Do you need to review that, or...
Sometimes there is. So, for example, if we're trying to course correct a misnomer in the community and you're still communicating something that's not accurate, sometimes it is. I can't think of exactly one time, because I've had many situations where I had to go back through and talk to elected officials and say, no, this is what it actually says. Not quite that, it says this. Like, I've had situations where service providers have said, we ran out of money. No, you didn't run out of money. We're not giving you any more money because you haven't met the performance metrics and you haven't spent the money I gave you. You need to move your budget around. Yeah. So I've had lots of those conversations where elected officials have caught me and said, I've been told that the service provider doesn't have any money to provide training. That's not true. They do have money to provide training. They need to adjust their budget.
So the request is for them to fill out this form in advance.
As far in advance as they can provide us so that we know that what they're doing. So we're not stepping on our toes. I also had a situation where I sent our staff out to a job fair. We got there and the service provider had a table and it's kind of like, well, we don't need two tables.
Oh, right. Have you told the service providers this is coming?
We've asked for information. Like, I've asked them, give me a list of all the committees or organizations that you sit on our behalf so we can mm-hmm. I'm aware of that. That's but I don't fair. Have a policy in place to kind of say you can't do this. So
yeah.
Is there going to be, I know you do the monthly meetings with the partners. I'm assuming you'll review this during that time and there'll be some type of acknowledgement policy, like,
yes.
My concern with, as you know, things get lost in translation for various reasons. I'm just trying to figure out how this will be enforced.
Yep. Every policy that we enforce, any policy that this board passes, here's what happens. So that Lalit, Maggie, Javier, me, one of the staff will sit down with the service provider and review the policy page by page. And we'll ask them to sign off on it. And then we'll ask for them to have their staff review it. And then we usually ask for a signature page proof, like stating that I've reviewed this with all my staff. Or it also, what I've done in the past is I've had Zoom meetings where I record it and I invite them all to come on the Zoom meeting and I go over the policy with them. That way I have it documented that I actually did go over this with you. I open it up for any questions or concerns and who was in attendance.
Okay.
And what is the consequence if they don't adhere to this and they go to an event and don't tell you?
That's a great question. We need to develop a policy on what happens when people don't follow our rules. So I'm going to be working on kind of like talking about that with this board of when service providers are not in compliance and when service providers don't seem to get their act together, what will this board want to do? So I will be working on a policy.
And would that be annotated when you look at past performance and future bidding?
I think that's a good suggestion. And I think we should be looking at that. How well did you do? Did you work well with this? Or, you know, were you?
Yeah. Did you collaborate? Were you transparent? Were you? Because they're a vendor. They're representing your the county's interests.
They're representing this board's interest. Remember, this is
right.
Yeah, by law, it's this board actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I move to approve.
Yeah, I'll second that.
And I'll move on with the roll call vote. Rob Claudio.
Aye.
Mike Daniel. Chris Horton.
Aye.
Barbara Mason.
Aye.
Gary Mackin, Carlos Aragon. Carlos?
Hi, sorry.
Oh, it's okay. Michael Ruin and Brinell Tumor Bias.
Aye.
And that is majority.
In the effort of time, Desiree, I'm just going to take over the rest of the meeting reporting out. I'm just going to make it really fast. You guys have this material. You can go back and read it. At anything that you go back and read or you have a question or concern on, shoot me an email. I will respond. So Desiree, if we scroll to 124, starting at 124, this starts the survey. So we kind of talked earlier about the Survey Monkeys, right? So all participants and service providers are provided opportunity to provide a survey of their experience with the system. These are the survey results. I am not going to go over all of it with you. I'm just going to highlight mm-hmm. where it is so that you guys can take a look at it later and see what the survey results people are saying. And let me know if you have any questions or concerns about it. All right. The next if you're okay with this, I'm going to move to the next item. All right, mm-hmm. Desiree, the next item on the agenda, I might be moving faster than I can help. The next item on the agenda was a participant survey. So that started on page 133. Again, same thing. This is the surveys, had it backwards, partners. This is a survey from the system partners and their input from their experience. Remember, it's important for our partners to be happy with the system and communicate changes that they'd like to see. So when you get a minute, if you can take a look at this, and if you have questions or concerns, let me know.
I that was 133?
That was starting on page 133. Okay. I feel really bad because one of my staff members did an amazing report on BEEP. I really want him to report out, but we don't have time. I will say that this BEEP program got a late start. They are already at 50% enrollment. I believe that they've got about, so the contract goal was 180 participants. They've got half of that already, and they've got 52 people placed already. That's pretty good. I don't want to steal their thunder, so I'm going to ask that the next board meeting, hopefully it's not a 200-page meeting, that I have Anthony come back and provide this kind of report to you about where he's
at. That would be good.
But it's really, they've got a really great success story. All right.
We need those. I think it's helpful for the board to see that.
We do. For the National Dislocated Worker Grant, I'm just going to tell you flat out, I don't know if you remember, we received, it started off with $800,000 to create OJTs for, with employers to support individuals who've been dislocated as a result of COVID-19. We started off with $800,000. We had a slow start. We gave back $400,000 to the state. We have since given all the money back to the state because we only had one participant enrolled. So from this entire time, we only had one participant put in an OJT opportunity. It didn't make sense to keep the money, so we gave it back to the state. But the report starts on page 151. I will tell you that Rhonda and the Business Solutions team created 31 OJTs in this period that we had the money, but only one placement out of the 31 OJTs were created. We're going to continue to try to work with the one-stop Title I career service provider and the youth provider and our other community organizations to identify job seekers that are suitable for these OJT opportunities, but she's created some really good ones and we just can't seem to get anybody in them.
Why do we think that is? Was it COVID or?
I don't know. So I don't know. I think it might be a combination of people not going back to work, but it also might be who's in the system. Maybe we don't have the right people for these opportunities, or we haven't identified transferable skills that make them right for this. So I think there are a lot of people there's nearly 700 people in our workforce system. I have to believe that at least one person would have been a great fit for the service technician position with clean energy. And
not seeing the long term. They might say that sounds interesting, but where does it take me?
Maybe that, or I've never been in this position, so I don't know, I don't have the skill sets, and they might have them. So it's identifying transferable skills too that I think might've been a little bit of a challenge.
Uh-huh. And is it clear that it's paid? Because sometimes OJT is unpaid in some circumstances.
It's always clear as play because we list the salary right there.
All right.
Yeah, they have to be paid.
All right. So when you get a minute, if you could review that material, if you have any questions or concerns, give me a call, shoot me an email. I'll go over with you any questions you have about that particular item. All right. And so let me see. The next item that was on agenda was a regional initiatives. So we have been engaging with community-based partners and businesses to go into a grant opportunity. It's called the SURF grant. It's roughly about $25 million. It's over a three-year period of time. It will provide economic development support as well as some of our regional activities and engagement with businesses to create pipelines. There are more to come on that. I just want to high level tell you that we've been engaging with that. Annette has identified for the industry sector conversations. She's identified the rollout of the different groups that will meet together starting in July. you should see a flyer within the next couple of days that invite you to send it out to your networks to have So she's sending me notes. I'm sorry. You should see a flyer to invite you to that. The other thing is we've invited you to a regional board meeting. So the three workforce boards getting together, having a regional meeting. Hold on. I believe that is on July 21st. So you should have received an invitation for it. I hope that you can come. This is the first opportunity we've had in a very long time to meet with the other three workforce boards. And let me see, there was one more thing. Annette, it popped up and then it went away. I'm sorry, Annette. Let me go back. There's one more thing she asked me to say.
Yeah, there is a meeting notice for the 21st. It did go out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Okay, so she's got the meeting for that. And then the industry sector launch meetings. I'm sorry, she gave me clarity on that. So the very first one is information technology. That's on June 21st. So we're looking for IT organizations to join in and digital media organizations to join in that conversation. The second meeting is healthcare. So we're looking for the healthcare industry and anyone who plays a role in the healthcare industry to participate in that. That's on June 22nd. And then there's a manufacturing sector meeting starting on June 29th. We will be sending out flyers on those three industries, and we're hoping that you'll share it with your network. And if you can please attend. I think it's going to help us to start engaging in conversations that are long overdue in this community. All right, I'm going to keep rolling. Hiring initiatives. I'm just going to share with you that there's a report attached with all the hiring initiatives created by the Business Solutions Department that have gone out to our service providers so that they can place the participants that are enrolled in our program. There are quite a few. There are quite a few events that she's done. There are quite a few employment opportunities she's created. In the event that you're wondering what has Business Solutions done for our service providers, that will provide you some insight of all the work that they've done towards supporting our system. Okay, and then the last thing is the one-stop MOU and infrastructure agreement. Okay, so as you know, we are required to update the MOU and infrastructure agreement for our facilities. We are currently engaging in conversations with one-stop system partners and identifying new partners to join our workforce system. I do have a bit of a challenge. It is due in June. However, the South County location, I just signed the lease today. It'll go in front of the Board of Supervisors if it gets approved. We will have an actual lease agreement before July 1. However, we're not going to be able to move in until November is what I've been told by real estate. What that means is that once we move into that location and identify the cost to operate it, I have to go back and redo our MOU and infrastructure agreement. The same thing will have to happen for Brea. So Rob and I went out and toured a potential location for a Brea site earlier this week. We like it.
Really nice.
We are going to work with a county real estate to try to secure that location. As I mentioned earlier in this call, our Garden Grove lease ends in 14 months and we need to relocate out of that so that we are in compliance with the law. Because right now we're not in compliance because that lease agreement is not in our name. It is in the service provider's name and we need to stop that practice. So just wanted to give you that update. In regards to the Business and Economic Recovery Call Center, the calls have been, I'm just trying to highlight, I got 2 minutes left. The call center is doing great. We're answering calls on the micro business grant. The grant matrix is attached. If you have questions on that, give me a call. I've also, the last item in that packet is the EDD compliance updates. I haven't given you this in a while. I'm going to get in the habit of bringing this back to your attention. We do have some open compliance findings that have stemmed all the way back to 2016 that are still open. And I just wanted to let you guys know that they were still open. But I also wanted to highlight to you of all the ones that we've recently had that have closed and we've had no findings. And it's a result of our policies. We've done a great job as a workforce development board, putting out policies to clear up some challenges. So you can see that pretty much all the ones in green that we had are all completed, no problems. We've got the blue is where we're going out doing monitoring of our service providers, and the gray are the program monitoring of our service providers. And I think I did a good job of that one last minute. Any questions or concerns?
You sure did. Wow.
on the findings, Karma, the largest one, which was that, I can't remember the year anymore, but it was with it was a multi-million dollar one. Is that one closed?
No, sir, it's not. It's up in the orange.
Oh, okay. Mm.
Yeah. And it's multi-years, Rob, and I think that it's a bit of a challenge to try to sift through that one, and which is why a lot of the policies we created to get ahead of what I saw as the challenges of them sifting through that one.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
All right. I do appreciate the chart, though. It makes it easier to follow up on it.
All right. Any other questions or concerns? That was a long meeting.
I know.
It was. And we didn't get through everything in depth, but we have the packet. And thank you, Karma. It is 3:00. So in keeping with our schedule, we will adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good afternoon. Bye.